It is winter in Mansfield Park. On the other side of the world, Sir Thomas Bertram and his eldest son Tom are in Antigua, trying to rescue the family fortune. But here, in the county of Northamptonshire, Mrs. Norris has more important things on her mind. She is engaged in promoting the gaieties of Fanny's cousins, displaying their accomplishments and looking about for their future husbands.
Miss Bertram. Miss Julia. We're very delighted to see you, I'm sure.
The Miss Bertrams are indeed now fully established as the belles of the neighbourhood.
Might I ask you to reserve for me the first of your dances tonight?
Their vanity is in such good order that they seem to be quite free of it.
My dear Miss Bertram, is not the evening quite chilly? Indeed, frosty, but not inclement.
Maria is engaged to Mr. Rushworth.
Mr. Rushworth, are you not dancing?
Perhaps. Later. Yes. My dancing, you see, I do not excel at dancing.
Oh.
Although I am tolerable. Not bad, you understand, but without the flair, shall we say, that some possess.
Mr. Rushworth is all that Mrs. Norris might desire for her eldest charge. Heavy, with not more than common sense. A marriage to Mr. Rushworth would provide Maria with an income larger than her father's and a house in town.
Will you not speak with my sister, Mr. Rushworth, while I fulfil my obligations for the first dance?
Of course.
And what of Fanny? She is to have no share in the festivities of the season. Instead, her duty is to be useful as her aunt's companion, reading to her and attending to her needs.
Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds or bends with the remover to remove. Oh, no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken.
By the summer of that year, Fanny is 18, and the society of the village receives an addition in the persons of Henry Crawford and his sister Mary.
How delightful of our new neighbours to invite us to dinner.
A family of such consequence right here upon our doorstep is a very convenient thing indeed.
Goodness me, what a house.
And rumour has it there's a young man destined to inherit that house and the estate, not to mention his father's title.
It is always sociable to meet new people, is it not?
Miss Crawford is glad to find a family of such property so very nearby. Matrimony is her object. Provided she can marry well.
The youngest Miss Bertram, I believe, is a nice, handsome, accomplished girl. Knowing how you love to flirt, I am quite sure she will not be safe from your attentions.
Please, Mary, just because I'm of a cautious temper and I'm willing to rush my happiness, there is no need to be so unkind. No one can think as highly of the matrimonial state as myself.
The young Bertrams and the Crawfords are pleased with each other from the start. Mr. Crawford is a gentleman with a pleasing address, and Miss Crawford, beautiful, without a doubt.
I like these Miss Bertrams exceedingly, sister.
I am delighted to hear it, Henry, but you like Julia best.
Miss Maria Bertram is undoubtedly the handsomest.
But Miss Maria Bertram is engaged. Remember that, my dear brother. Her choice is made. It is a great match for her.
But Miss Maria Bertram does not care three straws for Rushworth. What of the illustrious Tom Bertram?
I'm sure I do not know.
Have you not your own aspirations regarding this most desirable family?
It is every woman's duty to marry well.
Duty, indeed.
One which we women take perhaps more seriously than you men.
You think we men know nothing of duty? What of the duty to our hearts?
My dear Mr. Crawford.
Miss Julia.
Do you not like to dance? You've been sitting here quite still all evening.
Alas, Miss Julia, I wished only to dance with you.
With me?
And finding the courage to request the pleasure was quite beyond me. You are the most beautiful woman in the room. However could I hope that you might include my name upon what must be already an oversubscribed list?
I shall do my best to find a moment for you, Mr. Crawford.
I am in your debt.
It is only a matter of time before you too fall under the spell of a woman.
To be spellbound, certainly. But to marry, I think not.
I do believe, brother, that there is not one in 100 of either sex that are not duped when they wed. It is, of all the transactions, the one in which people expect the most of others and are least honest themselves.
Thank you. What do you think of our new neighbours, Fanny?
She is very beautiful.
Miss Crawford. Yes. And her brother seems a pleasant enough fellow.
Have you seen how he watches Mariah?
Mariah? Yes, of course. She's about to sing, is she not?
I believe your elder brother has left you for a time, Mr. Bertram.
He is attending to my father's affairs abroad, Miss Crawford.
Eldest sons are of particular interest to Miss Crawford. A woman who knows how to appreciate social position and wealth.
A wide experience of life is to be applauded in a gentleman, and especially in a gentleman who is destined to inherit such an estate as Mansfield Park.
And what of Fanny Price? Fanny, who is without power, influence, or position. She watches from a distance as her cousin Edmund and Mary Crawford walk together in the gardens before the house.
I begin now, Mr. Bertram, to understand you all. Except, perhaps, Miss Price.
They look across the lawn to where Fanny sits with her Aunt Bertram, as Pug blinks lazily in the sunshine.
Fanny is her own woman?
Hardly a woman, yet. In a year or two, yes. She will be lovely, I'm quite sure.
Do you ride, Miss Crawford?
I have never been upon a horse in my life.
But that is a terrible state of affairs. We have horses here. I shall teach you.
I suspect I shall be an immensely irritable and ungrateful pupil.
Then I shall be a positive monster of a tutor.
I had a French tutor many years ago. He used to grind his teeth when I made mistakes.
What a fool he must have been.
And why is that?
I cannot imagine anyone becoming angry with you.
How very kind you are, Mr. Bertram.
I wish you could see Compton, Mrs. Norris. I never saw a place so altered in my life. The approach now is one of the finest in the country. I declare, when I got back to Southerton yesterday, it looked like a prison. Quite a dismal old prison.
Oh, Mr. Rushworth, a prison indeed. Southerton Court is the noblest place in the world.
It wants improvement, ma'am. I never saw a place that wanted so much improvement in my life.
If I had anything within the 50th part the size of Southerton, I should always be planting and improving. It was only the spring 12-month before Mr. Norris's death that we put in the apricot against the stable wall, which has grown into such a noble
tree. Mr. Rushworth, if I were you, I should contrive to have a very pretty shrubbery at Southerton. In good weather, one likes to get out in a shrubbery.
At Compton, they have cut down some fine old trees. It opens the prospect amazingly. I would certainly like to have the avenue at Southerton down.
Cut down the avenue? What a pity that would be, to cut down lovely trees is a sad thing indeed.
I'm afraid the avenue stands a bad chance, Fanny.
I should like to see Southerton before the trees are gone.
You've never been there? What a pity.
Mr. Bertram, I have tidings of my harp at last. I am assured it is safe at Northampton, but how do you think it is to be conveyed? Not by a wagon or cart. Oh, no, nothing of that kind could be hired in the village.
You would find it difficult, I dare say, just now, Miss Crawford, in the middle of a very late harvest.
I was astonished to find what a piece of work was made of it. And now it seems by the very act of simply asking, I have offended all the farmers and half the hay in the parish.
You could not have been expected to have thought on the subject before, but in harvest it is well beyond any farmer's power to spare even a horse.
I shall understand your ways in time, but coming down with the true London man maxim that everything is to be got with money, I was a little embarrassed at first by the sturdy independence of your country customs.
The harp is my favourite instrument, Miss Crawford. I do hope I shall be allowed to hear you play.
I shall be delighted. And Mr. Bertram, if you write to your brother in the West Indies, I entreat you to tell him that my harp is come, and I look forward to playing it for him on his return.
If I write, I shall say whatever you wish of me. But I do not at present foresee any occasion for writing.
What strange creatures brothers are. You have but one style of writing among you. Oh, I know it perfectly. Henry, who is in every other respect exactly what a brother should be and will talk to me by the hour, has never yet turned the page in a letter. And often it is nothing more than, Dear Mary, I am just arrived. Bath seems full and everything as usual. Yours sincerely.
When they are at a distance from all their family, brothers can write long letters.
Miss Price has a brother at sea. Do you know his captain, Miss Crawford? Captain Marshall?
We know very little of the inferior ranks. Captains may be very good men, but they do not belong to us.
Perhaps, Mr. Crawford, you would do me the honour of coming over to Southerton and giving me your opinion on the improvements.
I should be delighted to be of service.
Then why do we not make up a party? Mr. Crawford would take my two nieces and me in his barouche. Edmund can go on horseback, and Sister Fanny will stay at home with you.
But Fanny should come with us, for she particularly should like to see the estate.
Indeed. Yes. A trip to Southerton for all of us.
Oh, good idea.
A young woman such as Miss Crawford, pretty, with a harp as elegant as herself, and both placed near a window opening onto a little lawn, surrounded by shrubs in the rich foliage of summer, is enough to steal any man's heart. By the end of a week, Edmund is beginning to be a good deal in love.
I cannot believe that you have only this week set yourself upon a horse for the first time, Miss Crawford.
I can hardly believe it myself, Mr. Bertram.
But are you not tired?
I am very strong. Nothing ever fatigues me but doing what I do not like.
Oh, Fanny, there you are. I've been looking everywhere for you. Ah, you are watching Miss Crawford riding with Edmund.
They are a little late returning, Aunt.
And surely you would not begrudge them their pleasure. What a fine couple they make.
My dear Miss Price, I am come to make my own apologies for keeping you waiting for your horse.
I'm quite sure Fanny doesn't mind. Do you, Fanny?
No, indeed.
I have nothing in the world to say for myself, Miss Price. I knew it was very late, and I was behaving very ill. And therefore, if you please, you must forgive me.
And so it is that Mary Crawford continues to ride daily with Edmund, while Fanny is forced to withstand the company of her two aunts.
Fanny, are you idling your day upon the sofa? If you have no work of your own, I can supply you with the poor basket. I'm sure I've almost broke my back cutting up this new calico. You should learn to think of other people. And take my word for it, it is a shocking trick for a young person to be always lolling upon a sofa.
Her work completed, Fanny goes out. She looks down to the land beyond the parsonage, and there she sees them. Edmund and Mary Crawford on horseback, riding side by side. Edmund is close to Mary, speaking to her, directing the management of the bridle, holding Miss Crawford's hand.
Come, Miss Crawford. Let us ride as far as the stream, and I shall show you where the nightingale builds her nest every year.
All that was once reserved for Fanny's unique friendship with her cousin is now gone, given seamlessly, easily to another. She wonders at her own pain as she watches her Edmund and his newfound companion delight in each other's company.